Hello, friends, and welcome in for another episode of Vol Club Confidential. I'm your host, Austin Price. Tennessee and Texas coming up on Saturday. A big game for the Vols as they dip outside of conference play after a solid January in conference play. They'll dip out for this one game and then dip back in coming up this week. Joined by James Clausen of Spire Sports. James, you all will have a huge tailgate coming up for this game on Saturday. Just kind of take me through the decision to try to do this. We talked a little bit about it last week, but at the same time, it's unique because everybody associates tailgating with football.
Yeah, we're excited. We're really excited about it. It's going to be Saturday. Members can check their emails this week for more information. But, you know, it's going to be indoors. We'll have a lot of food, drinks. We'll have football players there. So it should be a really good time.
Will you be doing homemade food there? We have the skillet out there.
Do you want me to be?
No, I've seen you cook.
Okay.
It's bad. Take me through this shirt right here. You had the Dixieland Delight polo.
Yeah.
You know, with inward half back in football season, you had the beer barrel.
Yeah.
Now you've got this basketball one with all these cool jerseys on it. You got Lofton, you got Ernie, you got Bernie. Kind of neat.
Yeah, so we got our third inward half polo, our collab with them. So the basketball polo, you know, we're really excited about it. We obviously had the beer barrel, like you mentioned. We had Dixieland Delight. This is the basketball one. A lot of cool references, like you said, back to things in the past, things that, you know, most Tennessee fans will recognize.
Allen Houston.
Yeah, absolutely. Old school court, the way it looked, you know, back in the
Stokely.
Back in the day. So, yeah, we're excited about that. And then – baseball, we'll have a baseball polo coming out too before baseball season. So kind of like that, but it may be a little bit different twist on it.
Nice. So,
yeah.
What's the theme of this polo?
The theme of this polo?
Yeah.
What would you say the theme is?
The rafters, because all those guys are in the rafters.
Okay. Yeah.
That's rafters. What we're calling it.
I like it.
The Rocky Top Rafters Polo by Inward Half.
There we go.
Spire Sports. I just named it. Boom. Yeah. Hey, like that. All right, enough of James Clausen, enough of me. Now let's get to the star of the show, Tennessee linebackers coach, Brian Jean-Marie.
Hey, what's up, Austin?
What's up, man?
How are you doing?
Good, you?
Doing great. Doing great.
Coach BJ.
Yes, sir.
Brian Jean-Marie, or as I joked last week with Coach Banks, as us old East Tennesseans would call it, Brian Jean Mary. how much do you hear that?
A ton. You know, I was born in New York City where there's a lot. I'm Haitian.
Sure.
Both parents are from Haiti. So there's a lot more Haitians up there. So they pronounce it correctly. When I moved down south, I went to Apopka High School down around outside of Orlando, Florida. That's when the different variations of my last name really started to take shape. So Jean Mary kind of sticks because that's what, you know, people are used to.
When you kind of got into coaching, you know, after your playing career was over with, you know, was there a moment in time where you said, this is what I want to do. Like I want to go down this road. I love the game too much to go, you know, do something else.
It's a typical story. I thought I was a pretty good football player. You know, I was a linebacker at Appalachian State, and I was roommates and best friends with one of the greatest 1AA, you know, football players in history, and Dexter Coakley, who played for the Cowboys, played in the NFL for 10 years. Now that I'm a coach, I realize I wasn't as good as him, but it was good to think that when I was a player. I was often injured when I was in college, had different knee injuries, tore my ACL, tore it twice, actually. So I had more time in the training room than on the field. And just to stay engaged and stay involved, you know, I got in with some of the coaches, got involved with game planning, always thought I was an intelligent football player and could really think the game. So, you know, my last year, I was more of a player coach than I was a player. I played some, but I was really could, you know, run the room, the linebacker room, and, you know, coach some of those younger guys. So it was natural.
When you go through what you went through as far as being in the training room, go through the double ACLs and stuff, does that make it easier when you're a coach and you have one of your players go through a tough time because you can kind of talk to him about experience and you know, kind of what you dealt with?
Yes, you know, 100%. Injuries are a part of football.
Sure.
You know, some injuries are worse than others. I mean, I'm the perfect example of that. But you know, I always talk to the guys and just tell them, make sure you stay engaged, because that's the one part when you're injured, it feels like the team, you know, the season kind of goes on without you, and you can get into a lonely place. And I think that's one of the things I feel like I really do bring to the table. We want to keep those guys connected, make them still feel like they're part of the team. And, you know, I always tell them, when you get back, you want to hit the ground running. So you don't want to, you know, kind of isolate yourself and, you know, throw a pity party. You're still part of the team, and you're still a big part of the team. And we want to keep you involved, because once you get, you know, healthy, you're right back in the mix, and let's get back to football and playing at a high level.
You joined Coach Banks' defensive staff and Coach Heupel's overall staff from Michigan.
Yes.
You know, when you made that move, you got here for spring, and you had basically me playing linebacker because everybody was injured or had left the program. When you think about where you were that first practice or two and where you are now with the influx of young linebacker talent, and then you've got Keenan Peely coming in from yes. BYU and stuff, get you excited, because you've kind of weathered through like no depth and stuff like that. I mean, it gets you excited knowing about like what you got coming.
Yes, it does. I know our first spring, I had to really you know, dig deep into my coaching you know, bag,
and it was really me playing linebacker.
it was rough, but you know, with you could see the future
sure.
and what it was going to become. You saw with Coach Heupel's vision that we were going to be able to build it the right way. Unfortunately, we had some guys that decided to leave the program, and we had some other guys that had some issues, you know, off the field. But you know, the guys that stayed weathered the storm, and you could tell, you know, the kids had so much pride in Tennessee that were there that spring. They weren't very talented, but they would give you their all, and you knew once the, you know, other guys came back and you could build it the right way, that the makings were going to be there for, you know, to have a really good, you know, really good group.
You've been some cool places. You've been Texas, Austin, Texas, and coached at the Big House in Michigan, Tennessee. How much fun has that part of your career been, to kind of be at some really blue blood type programs?
It's been a blessing. You know, I played 1AA football. I played at Appalachian State before they became a 1A program. So, you know, I coached at the University of North Alabama, Division II, a really, really good Division II program. That was my first really full-time job. So I've seen it, you know, on both ends. You know, I've been on the bus patrol, where you're taking buses, you know, 7-8 hours to go to games, and you know, it's not as glamorous.
Sure.
So you really do appreciate when you get a chance to go to some, you know, some of the blue blood programs, and the tradition is you know, second to none. I think that's the part that really stands out. You know, there's all programs are good. You know, you go to any Division I, Power 5 programs are good. But when you really start talking about some of the blue bloods and the tradition and the history of those programs, it kind of makes the hair stand up on you, on your arms a little bit, because you know you're somewhere special.
So you joined this defensive staff. Did you know anybody coming in? I mean, did you know Rodney or Willie or any of these guys?
I knew of them. You know, I coached at Georgia Tech for 6 years, and Rodney and Willie gave me a lot of headaches when they were getting after us when they were at the University of Georgia. So obviously through recruiting and just sure. being in the same state, knew of them, had a lot of respect, a ton of respect for them, two great coaches. So was when I knew they were here, that was part of, you know, that piqued, part, one of the things that piqued my interest about coming on staff was having the ability to work with those two guys.
Best part of Knoxville that you found is what?
The best part of Knoxville? That's a good question. I'm going to say this to you. I've driven through Knoxville several times. I not really have stopped in the Knoxville. I heard a lot of great things about the university, but I'm was pleasantly surprised, me and my family, at how metropolitan, you know, Knoxville.
That's what Coach Banks said last week. I mean, it's a city feel to it.
It's a city feel to it, but it still has that small town, at, you know, vibe to
sure.
it, where you don't feel like the hustle and bustle of being in Atlanta or in Nashville. So I think it's the best of both worlds. I mean, I said it, you know, within my first 2 months here, this is, you know, one of the hidden gems of the South. I think it's a great, great city.
So your kids are at that age where, you know, they're starting to become, you know, little people. I mean, yes. As far as like, you know, I mean, like little men and little women,
yes.
You know, not kids anymore.
Yes.
Do you kind of relish that? I mean, I got to see out there at Webb this fall and you're watching your daughter dance, yes. And stuff. Just kind of being a dad. I mean, I know you guys work long hours. So I mean, like when you can get a chance to go out and just be dad, how much do you kind of look forward to those moments?
It's one of the highlights of my week when I do get a chance to spend some time with them. I say, God blessed me with two daughters because I'm around young men all the time. Obviously, being in the profession for as long as I've been, I feel like I've had 100 sons. So, you know, you get a different perspective when you're dealing with females. Obviously, being the only male in the house, sometimes you can pull what little hair I still have left. I'm pulling it out because I don't ever see things from the female perspective, which is probably good. But they keep me honest. They keep me whole. I tell people all the time, either I'm gonna grow old a lot faster than I should, or they're going to keep me young. And so far, they keep me young because they keep a smile on my face.
Yeah, girl dad here as well. it really is true, like, you know, the whole mama's boy, daddy's girl. Yes, I mean, yes. Like, you know, how often do that? Dad, mom doesn't want to let me do this. And they're like, they're leaning on you. Because that happens to me all the time.
Of course. Of course. One of the best pieces of advice I ever got was from an old businessman that, you know, I came up with when I was in Georgia. And I was all depressed when I found out I was having a girl. I'm going to be honest with you. My dad only had boys, come from a family full of boys. So when I found out I was having a girl, I'm like, no, wait. He's like, Brian, I'm telling you, it's the best thing that's going to ever happen to you. He said, I've been around you. One day you're going to get old. Nobody's going to want to be around you. He's like, those girls, they're going to stay with you till the end. He said, I got two boys right now. I have to try to track them down, ask them how they're doing. So he's like, having those girls, he said, it's going to be a blessing to you. So I still remember that, and I still believe that to be true.
Favorite family tradition? Is it just Christmas morning? Is it Thanksgiving? What is it for you? Is it something off the beaten path?
The one thing that we do as a family, we've been doing since they were small. You know, we're always going to take a family vacation somewhere, but we're always going to do something where we're going to be in the car, where we're going to drive, you know, whether it be, you know, 6 or 8 hours where we have our great family time. Nobody can escape. No cell phones, you know.
Lock the doors.
Yeah, there you go. And it's just our time to be together, you know, talk about things going on with them, things going on in the world, you know, what are your future plans, how's everything going? And sometimes, you know, being trapped in that car, you feel like you're a world away and it's just, you're on an island by yourself. And those are some of the best memories because as they've gotten older and those conversations have changed, I think they really do appreciate the family time that we get, just the four of us.
Favorite TV show growing up?
As a adolescent, I think my favorite TV show would have probably been, you're going to laugh, for you old school people, would have been Cheers. As growing up in New York, that was, one of the better shows just because it was comedy, but had some real life, you know, events in it too. So I know a lot of people don't probably want, the young kids wouldn't even know what that is, but as an adult, my favorite show of all time was Sopranos.
I'm with you. I would say growing up, I loved Older. I loved Get Smart. I loved Andy Griffith. Like Nick at Night. I could watch that stuff all day long. Although underrated, Unsolved Mysteries with Robert Stack. flip it to now. I love 24. I love Jack Bauer.
Oh, that's a great show.
Just because it's constant.
Oh, yeah.
And if you're trying to binge watch, you'll be up all night.
There's no doubt.
It ends on a cliffhanger every episode. Favorite movie of all time?
I'm probably giving away too much of my personality, my character, but I'm gonna say Scarface.
I love Scarface.
Yes,
I felt like a lot of the buildings in Miami when we were done for the Orange Bowl.
Yes.
It still looks
they
like
still
the it looks the same facade that
same.
from when that was filmed 40 years ago.
Yes.
I asked Coach Heupel this at our recruiting celebration back last month. You go in for all these in-home visits, and all these parents and moms make all these different meals, and you're constantly eating different types of food.
Yes.
When you show up, I'm not going to put you on the spot to say which one do you not like, but when you show up, Are you ever like, oh, I just had that last night at somebody else's house?
Well, the thing with most parents, they usually ask you,
sure,
you know, what do you like? You know, what meals?
So you can control it a little bit.
So you can control it a little bit. And, you know, I think most of them keep it simple. They're not, you know, they're not going to make, you know, a dish that's kind of foreign to you. So that's good. You know, a lot of chicken, a lot of pasta, I was going to say spaghetti, which is pasta, you know, nothing over the top. I think they try to keep it simple because they don't know what people like and don't like.
Best meal you've ever had from a recruit's mom is what?
Oh, wow. You ask. I've been doing this for a long time, Austin.
No, I'm with you. But, like, has there ever been one that just sticks out where you see that kid and you instantly think, that meal stays with me today?
I'm gonna say this to you. I always say the best meal in your mind that you thought you ate was probably because you was probably really hungry when you ate it. So I don't know if the meal was that good, but probably one of the best meals I ever had is a young man who does commentating for ESPN right now, Roddy Jones,
yeah,
who works for ESPN. I recruited him when I was at Georgia Tech, and I went to his home, and I could see his mom laughing. We caught her in the corner of her eye because me and the head coach at the time, Chan Gailey, went back for thirds. So she was snickering. And the funny part, like what you said, parents communicate. So we went to another young man's house maybe 2 days after that, and his mom had like a feast laid out on the table. And within 5 minutes, we looked at each other and was like, yeah, they've been talking. she knew she had to prepare a bigger meal because she heard how much we ate at the previous young man's house.
What's the best recruiting story you got that we can tell? Whether it be going head-to-head with somebody, staying in the house till midnight, trying to fend somebody off. I mean, I know that doesn't happen as much anymore.
But I've been a part. I've definitely been a part of that. It's been so many. I think one of the better ones, probably when when I was at the University of Texas, we recruited one of the top linebackers in the country, Malik Jefferson, and he made no bones about it. He was going to Texas A&M with Coach Sumlin, and
but you still had to do it.
Yeah, we went over to the house, and I can't think of the young man that was worked for a recruiting site. He was in the kid's room recording as we were in the house, talking to the young man. So mom, dad, brother, everybody come over, and we're just going over everything, trying to, you know, lay out why it would be better to, to come to the University of Texas at the time. And, you know, we everything on the up and up. We're telling them, you know, the experience and everything. And the kid's like, all right, I got to go. So he leaves and he goes into his room. He's in his room for 40 minutes. So I'm thinking, what in the world is going on? And then he comes back and he was like, you know what, coach, everything that you talked about, I believe you. I was going to Texas A&M because he was a mid-year, but I'm really considering going back to Texas. I mean, going to Texas. And I was like, what in the world could have happened? Well, he goes back. He goes back in the room, listens to everything that the guy recorded, and then looks up to see if he fact-checked me with everything that I talked about. And obviously, I was 100% on when I talked about graduation rate, you know, what former players are doing. You know, these are the opportunities if you come there that can happen. He fact-checked everything with the kid, with that guy in the house, and came back, and we ended up getting him.
Boom.
That was wild. So I always go back. Every kid I've recruited
since then. The truth shall set you free.
Yes. Every kid I recruit since then, I always go into their room every time I go in the house.
Ironically, as you were waiting on Arion Carter to announce, it was Brent Hubbs and I in Arion Carter's room because he was trying to fend off Pete Golding, who was driving around Smyrna. And we were in there like, hey, Pete, you interviewed the kid on the bed. I said, that's where he wanted to do
that's
it.
Where he wanted to
I'd have done it at the stadium. He didn't want to deal with Pete Golding,
yes.
Which is just some kids. Yes. You have all these midterm guys come in, including Arion Carter. Could you notice anything in a handful of practices?
You can. The number one thing, you want to verify the athleticism. When you watch the kids, we didn't get a chance to get too deep into the physical part about it, but the movement skills from all three of those guys, they are definitely, you know, have a chance to be high-level SEC linebackers.
What traits do you feel like each possess? Like, I guess if you said best trait for Arian, best trait for T-Lander, best trait for Jalen Smith.
I'll start with Arian, the Tennessee kid. He has all the makeups to be, a high-level, all SEC type linebacker. Very, very intelligent, ask the right questions, very sudden, very powerful, quick feet, great burst, very aggressive in the way he does everything. Those are all traits to be, very, very successful. Obviously he's got to learn our system, learn the speed of the game. And I would say that all three of them, when I pulled them all three aside and spoke to them and said, what did you think you did? What did you feel you did well? And what do you feel like you need to work on? All three of them were, amazed at the speed of the game. All three said the offensive linemen in college move so much faster than they do in high school. I'm like, yes, that's the nature of, playing in the SEC. But Arian in particular, shows, innate skills, just dissecting plays. And, I always say a great skill is asking the right question. Some guys will ask questions just to kind of check to make sure that they're on the right path.
Sure.
He actually asked questions to try to connect 1 + 1 = 2. And I think that's a great skill to have because you can see how he processes and know he's going to be able to handle a college playbook.
How has your coaching style changed from when you became a coach to now? Has it morphed or is it still very similar to what you were several years ago?
I think it's changed just through maturity. I'm always going to try to be high energy. I came from some old school coaches who, were in your face, were going to, felt like the best way to get things out of you is like the Junction Boys. They're going to try to bury you and build you back up. I think football has changed. It's a 12-month deal now. I think when coaches were removed from players, when I was in school, you would see your coaches majority of time would be in spring practice, and then you'd see them when the season started. But now that football is a 12-month deal, and you're around them all the time, you know the relationships are a little better. You know what buttons to push without maybe being as in your face and not as boisterous as some of the coaches that I dealt with when I was coming up. So I think that's the evolution of coaching now. You still got to coach them hard. You still got to coach them to be prepared, for the worst case scenarios to help them be successful. But I think the relationship piece of it now, where they know it's a lifetime, relationship, not just a coaching relationship. I think that's the biggest difference.
Is there a moment in time where you just felt really a sense of pride for how a kid either was struggling in the classroom, got it figured out, struggling on the field, got it figured out, relationship you maybe you didn't feel like was, going the right way and then end up being one of the best relationships you've ever had? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, is there a moment in time where you felt like just a sense of pride with a particular player?
Yeah, I've had several. We all, obviously applaud the young men who go on and make it to the NFL because
sure.
That's a lifelong, goal. But there are several young men that, when they started college, you didn't see an end where they were going to graduate and walk across that stage. And when you see that, you have a, real sense of pride for them because you know what they worked through to get there. And I've had several, I think at every place that I've been, where they see the light at the end of the tunnel when it came to football wise, and they had a plan for when football was over with. And that gives you it gives me a sense of relief because you feel like just like you have kids, you're releasing them into the world with a plan. You want to make sure your players have the same.
If you go back and you weren't going to play football, what would you play?
A sport or a career?
Both.
I told you I was born in New York, so everybody thinks they're great basketball players in New York. I thought I was a really good basketball player, but once again, I wasn't. In my own mind, I was. But yeah, Saturday afternoons, the routine when I was in middle school was you'd watch the Big East game of the week. That was always played at around noon. And then afternoon, the basketball courts would be full until the lights, you know, turned off in the playground. And that was me probably from fifth to eighth grade.
Where did you live at in New York? And
I lived in Brooklyn. My mom lived in Jersey. My dad lived in Jersey. My mom lived in Brooklyn. So we went back and forth between Elizabeth, New Jersey, and Brooklyn, New York.
Best part of living in Brooklyn was what?
I joke with people, because of mass transit, as a seventh grader, I could go from New York to New Jersey. I could go to all five boroughs in New York between the buses and the trains. I knew the whole transit system, and they had sidewalks everywhere. So you could literally walk from one end sure. of New York to the other. I quickly found down south, that's not the same way everywhere.
No.
So that was the biggest culture shock. Like, everybody has to have a car. In down south, the obviously the transit system isn't the same with the buses and the trains. That was a shock to my system because that's all I knew. So I could go from New York to New Jersey through the trains and the buses when I was in the seventh grade with no problem, with no supervision.
All right, let's go rapid fire in New York. Giants or Jets?
Giants.
Yankees or Mets?
Mets.
Rangers or Islanders?
Rangers.
Nets or Knicks?
Knicks.
Okay, well, thank God. Even though you're from Brooklyn.
Well, they were in New Jersey.
No, correct. That's right. That's right.
When I was coming up, yeah.
That's right. You're old. We've already established that.
Yes.
Not as old as Coach Banks, though. best New York pizza.
It's been so long. I really don't remember. I'm going back there this spring, but I don't remember.
We're going to move into that 12-team playoff.
Yes.
First round. Will be at home sites. So in yes. theory, like Michigan could come to Tennessee or Tennessee yes. could go to Wisconsin or yes. whoever. How much do you like that? I'm a big proponent of home and homes. Like, I hate neutral site games.
Same.
Maybe not bowl game neutral site yes. games, but like, you know, Tennessee's going to play Syracuse and Atlanta coming up and West Virginia and Charlotte. Like, I just, that's nothing for me. I like going to Notre Dame coming here, yes. going to Cal and Cal coming here.
Yes.
You like that too?
I like home and home. Yes. I'm not a big fan of the neutral site game because it doesn't – I think it's a bowl atmosphere, but it's a regular season game. I'm not a big fan of neutral. I always feel like either you want to be the road team or the true home team.
One stadium that you've not coached in that you'd like to coach in? Not even – I don't mean as like coaching for them, but I mean like
– Yeah.
You know, if you went there for Tennessee or whoever.
In College Station. Didn't get a chance to go there. Yeah.
Come up, Texas A&M comes here next
yes,
year.
Yes, they do.
How proud were you of this season? I talked to Coach Banks about this last week. When you look at the defense, 13 games, 10 of them, you didn't allow 30 points. I mean, like, that's, to me, a huge improvement from yes. year one to year two. I'm not sure people love to talk about the offensive side of things, but like defensively, if you really look at it, you guys made as much improvement as anybody.
Yes. Yes. I thought, second year in the system, obviously you wish we didn't get ravaged by the injuries we did in the secondary. I thought front seven wise, we really improved. We had so many guys coming back. And like I said, second year in the system, I thought the kids played hard. I think that's going to be our calling card. You know, as long as Coach Heupel and Coach Banks are here, the kids are going to, you know, run through a wall for you. If we can keep that up and keep, you know, adding playmakers and just the culture piece of it where I feel like the kids really understand what we're trying to get done, I still think the best is yet to come.
Funniest coach in the staff room when you're just busting each other's chops is who?
Willie Martinez. Willie Martinez by far.
Is anybody sneaky? Like, all of a sudden they come out of like left field with like a left hook out of nowhere?
I would it'd probably be a tie. It would the one that was obviously the most is no longer with us. That would have been Coach Golish. Yeah, but I'm gonna make you laugh. Probably be Coach Ellerbe, because sometimes Glenn doesn't try to be funny, but some of the comments that he makes that's just sneaky, just like, I think I know what he meant by that. And you just start smiling because he's such a low-key guy. But, you know, when he does speak, you listen. And when he makes a comment, even though it's in his in a Glenn Ellerbe way, it's pretty funny.
Funniest player on the team, too.
It'd be, in my opinion, it's Brandon Turnage or Dylan Sampson.
Both guys, I think, have they smile a lot.
Always, always.
Best advice that you could give your younger self going out the door is what?
Don't always, you know, put yourself in a box. Just because it worked once doesn't always mean it's going to work.
Evolve.
Every time. Got to evolve, yes. You know, you got to look at every situation through a different lens. You got to make sure you're doing what's best to be successful in that situation. Too many times, and we've been around coaches that just, this is the way I did it before, this is the way I'm going to do it, and if it doesn't work, it just doesn't work. And I think we have to get past that as coaches. You got to get past that as just human beings.
Sure.
But I think coaching-wise, we put ourselves in boxes so many times, and that's where you see guys that are really good coaches that are not successful when they should be.
Well, Coach, we appreciate the time. Good deep dive on Brian Jean-Marie, my guy from New York.
Yes, sir.
Via Haiti.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Austin.
We appreciate you.
All right. Thank you.